How's it going? And welcome to episode 40 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. I'm once again joined by Kevin Hasting, who should be followed himself on the Twitter at Hasting. Kevin, I noticed you did a bit of moonlighting over at Dugout Study Hall podcast, another Pitcherless Podcast Network show with Matt and Alexander. It was great, man. You did a great job. It was great information. How fun was it for you?
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. It was a blast because it's one of my favorite pods to catch every week. So that always makes it a little extra fun getting to join a couple of guys that you'd listen to every week.
Yeah, absolutely. And those guys do a great job in every other week, just like we all are doing right now over at Pitcherless Podcast Network, putting out shows every other week. They'll be going back to every weekly shows just like us come probably February, maybe January. We'll see. So keep a lookout for that. If you haven't checked out that episode with Kevin over at Dugout Study Hall, make sure you do that. A lot of great tips on early drafting, which is, you know, something we're going to be talking a lot about today. We're going to be looking into our draft crystal balls a little bit and, you know, take a stab at some predictions of where the draft market will do some corrections in March compared to what we've been seeing in these early drafts. Players currently drafted in those drafts, draft and hold style formats, draft champions, you know, NFBC 50s, any other draft and hold in any other formats, and players picked at pick 350 that we expect to get a bump up the standard draft status come February or March. So more on that a little bit. We have a very special guest to help bring that to light. That is the co-host of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast and the Rotosaurus High Stakes Heat podcast. Dave McDonald joins us. Dave took part in the very first NFBC Draft Champions Draft back in October during First Pitch Arizona and is the first ever Earth overall champion, which we'll dive into a little bit later in the show. For now, Dave, thanks so much for joining us. How's the offseason treating you so far?
Hey, boys. Thanks so much for having me on. This is the earliest I've ever gotten going. This might be hard for you to believe, considering how much money I play for every year, but this is the earliest I've ever gotten going into the offseason. You mentioned that First Pitch Arizona draft back in Arizona. I was not ready for that at all. But yeah, it's been good because getting onto the podcasts and talking about this stuff, and you guys put together an excellent your show notes for today. And it really gets the juices flowing and starting to think about stuff that I normally don't usually get into until January, February. Yeah, it's been a busy offseason already.
Yeah, it's like anything else, man. It's the more you talk about it, you just talk through it. Just talk through it and you get more comfortable with anything you're doing. Obviously, we talked about it before. Kevin, you did an auction at First Pitch Arizona as well. I've been in a couple drafts. I just finished up my first draft champions yesterday and I'm starting my second one today as we're recording this on Monday. The 6th of December. By the time this comes out, hopefully I'm a couple rounds into that draft this coming Sunday. But I mean, Dave, I mean, you talk about it, like you play for a lot of money throughout the course of the season, may not start early on every single season, but like, how long have you been playing, quote, you know, the high stakes fantasy baseball? And what does high stakes mean to you? Is it more of a volume play? Is it more of a big money entry fees for certain, and what is it about those that kind of interests you?
Yeah, it's a question that doesn't really have a definitive answer. In my first Fangraphs article, I kind of tackled that question as like, what is high stakes? And I kind of, my friend John Legeza, aka MLB Moving Averages, threw that question out there. And the answers were all over the board. Like for some people, $100 is high stakes, or even like an NFBC $50 league. If you are used to playing for free and you don't necessarily depend on it for your income, like you're not playing at a high enough level, you're just playing casually, $50, $100, and you're not making significant money, that can be pretty expensive. But I think generally the industry accepts high stakes more in the $1,000 range. Although I would say NFBC actually has what they call like the high stakes games. And those are the games that are like, I think the minimum is $2,500 to enter, and that would be the super. And they go up to $15,000 entry fees. So everybody has different ideas. For me, arbitrarily, for whatever reason, I consider $250 and above to be high stakes. Just if I can win $1,500 plus in the league for getting first, I consider that fairly high stakes. And you made an interesting point about volume too. I guess I always thought about it just in terms of like single entry, like this league is a high stakes league, whereas I might not consider a $150 satellite to be high stakes, but it's a good point. If you do, you know, 100 or even like 20 $150 leagues, that could be considered high stakes for sure. So I actually got started in the high stakes realm with NFBC back in the day. I was a senior in college. I was only, I believe, 23 at the time. And I traveled to Chicago by myself, where my dad was living at the time. He and my mom are still together, but he got transferred and my mom didn't want to move to Chicago. So my dad went there for 5 years and he would drive back like on weekends to see her and everything. I was like, wow, that's dedication right there. Right. But yeah, so it was cool because I had a place to stay. In NFBC, you could draft from Chicago, New York, Las Vegas. And so the first year I just went and did it by myself. It was, I think at that time, $1,300 to do the main event. And I went by myself and I walked into the room and I was the youngest person in there. I think the next youngest after me was probably double my age. So they're like looking at me like, who is this kid? Where's his daddy? But I ended up placing third in my first league. So I got my money back and I told my friends about it. And Jake Halsker, who ended up winning the overall auction in NFBC a couple of years ago, one of my best friends, I came back and told him and my friend Tony about it. And we got like a group of guys together to go back the following year to Chicago again. And so then I kind of got them into it as well. And now all of my group of friends, we call each other nice. The consortium. We all play together. It was really like it was a fun way to hang out with your friends and do something together and enjoy it. And then after 2 years in Chicago, we went to Las Vegas for the first time when I was 25 years old. And then I've been going back to Vegas every year since. I think we're coming up on like the 13th year that I'll be going to Vegas in a row. So for NFBC. So I've been playing for a while at this level. It's addictive, man. If you're as new as I am, it's really hard. It's really hard to take a year off. You just want to keep doing those live drafts. Actually, I should say the year of Corona 2020 was the first year we couldn't go to Vegas. So that was the only time that we didn't end up doing the live draft through NFBC. But I do other drafts as well, like through Fantrax, Yahoo. But for live drafting, it's pretty much just NFBC. And it's a really awesome experience. And for those of you who, you know, haven't done it before and have the means to, I highly recommend it. But even if you don't, they have some lower stakes leagues, but you don't have to do the main event. You don't have to do a super league like me to spend $1,700 or $2,500 on a league. You can do some lower ones. I think they have some live online championships for $750. And what they do from year to year varies. They're always looking to bring in games that the community is interested in. Derek Butcher over there does a phenomenal job of handling everything and just really gives people what they're looking for.
Yeah, you mentioned that you've got like your core group of friends all into it as well and you're drafting together. That's amazing. I just started doing NFBC just a couple of years ago.
Oh,
last
cool.
year I got one of my buddies from my home league to join a league and he faltered, put it that way. He gave up on it. It's been difficult to get them to come into this kind of environment. I've been forced and lucky enough to be surrounded by just incredible people in the industry who also do these types of leagues as well. And have just created new friend circles and new groups of people. I have not been able to do a live draft yet. Kevin, you are signed, if I'm not mistaken, if I noticed it on the lobby, you are signed up for a live event this year. Are you doing, is it Vegas or New York?
It is Las Vegas, the auction championship. Awesome. I did that last year. It was my first live event. I had been scheduled for 2020. As Dave mentioned, we did not end up getting to go. I was actually, because I was making, living in Hawaii at the time, and I was making a pretty long trip. I was going to fly to Texas to do my home league drafts a weekend and then to Vegas the following weekend before returning to Hawaii. So I was leaving about 10 days from home before the draft was to take place. Literally the day I was going to the airport is when everything got shut down from COVID. Ugh. So I was ready to leave that day, but got back out there last year. It is absolutely amazing, as Dave said. Can't awesome. Wait to get back this year because 2021 was still a little weird in Vegas.
It was everything definitely was, off.
It wasn't regular Vegas. So I'm looking forward to 2022. Already signed up for the auction and I'm hoping to try to squeeze my first main event in as well.
Do you happen to know, is Jake signed? I'm not sure if he signed up yet. Which one did you do? Did you do the 10 a.m. one on that Saturday or?
The 10 a.m. Friday, Monday? And that's the one Friday. I did last year, and that is the one I sat next to Jake.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That'll be interesting. We'll definitely be, we've got our group of four of us with me, Jake, Tony, and our other buddy, Marcus. And
yeah,
between us, we always have a bunch of drafts and we always have like co-drafters helping us. The auction is difficult though, because it's so long. Like you're there for a typical draft is maybe 3 hours. An auction is closer to five. I want to say, Kevin, does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, we moved along pretty good and got it done in about five. I was prepared for it to be even longer, yeah. But we moved along pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. And the NFBC, they give you breaks and stuff after, I think, every 10 rounds or so. But yeah, I've never done an auction before. I've always wanted to, but it's on my list. I'm going to find the time to do one of these days.
Yeah. I'll stick with my new auction leagues for now and then just get a little warmed up before I handle Kevin's auction room for sure. We're talking about these high stakes leagues and what have you through NFBC and wherever else you might be playing as well. But the main focus of this pod is going to be talking about these players that are being drafted now. They're being drafted now post 350. There's ADP over at NFBC. It's public domain. You can go check it out and research it. I find it really interesting, not only for NFBC leagues that you might be drafting in soon, but just also great research for your upcoming drafts on other platforms. Granted, there are differences. We talk about this ad nauseum throughout the season between five outfielders compared to other platforms, the types, number of pitchers, number of roster spots, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's really good information because the players that are drafting in these drafts right now are dialed in for the most part. We've all been in a draft where we're like, I question why that person drafted the way they did, but okay, we'll just go with it. But Kevin, you really were the one that, whether you knew it or not, like really got me to start drafting early. This is the first year that I've started drafting early in early November, I'm in another draft right now that's about to start. I'm waiting. Oh, I'm on the clock. That's good. but like you draft also, you do your auction at in Arizona at first pitch. You've done a bunch of early drafts. What is it about those early drafts? I feel like we talked about this before, but I think it's worth mentioning. It's like what do you get out of it? And what has drawn you to it over the course of the years?
First and foremost, I'm a baseball fan and baseball season is over and it's continuing to follow and be as involved as I can be in baseball. So that's first and foremost. And then I think part of it is that it hasn't been a lot of them yet, but in the few early drafts I've done over the past 2 or 3 years, I've performed pretty well. So that keeps me coming back. And I think that has to do with it. If you're prepared, and we're going 750 players deep in these drafts, so you have to do some preparation. There's no previous ADP. I've seen discussions. We're not even sure. Nobody really agrees on what the site rankings are on the whether it be Fantrax or even the NFBC site, what these players' rankings are. What are those rankings?
They're interesting.
So haven't set your own, if you haven't done something on your own, you're pretty lost right out of the gate. All of that combined, it's just fun. That's the main reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more as far as like how much fun I have been having, and I'll continue to do it. You know, I don't know if I'll have a draft going on all the time throughout between now and then March, but I think I'm going to try.
I probably will. I had a nice about 3 week break and yeah, I think I'm done. I'm ready to roll for now through March.
I think the draw of drafting early, and I'm no expert, obviously, as someone who does not draft early, but from what I hear from a lot of people is you can get values on players in October, November, December that are far gone by the time you hit maybe even January, but February and March. If you feel like you've got a better handle on the market, on which players are currently way undervalued and which ones are going to be shooting up the boards. Like a bad example in terms of the human being, but in terms of his ADP compared to where he's going to be going later, Marcell Ozuna, now he's free. But I mean, in drafts earlier, he was going so late. And now that he's pretty much going to be hitting cleanup every day in the middle of the Braves lineup, he's going to jump probably, you know, up another 200, 250 slots from where he's currently going. So you can just, you can get values on players so late now that you're, if you've got a better handle, you're going to be able to take advantage of those. Personally, I like to draft with the most information possible, so I stay away from those. But if you're an early drafter, I imagine you're probably pretty good at that, or you should be.
Well, you drafted one of the first drafts ever this season. So you have that under your belt.
Yeah, that was free because my friends were all doing it. And Simeone was like, you know, SP streamer Michael Simeone, he was like, hey, Dave, we're all signed up for this draft, so hop in this. And I'm like, all right. So it's literally, it's me, him, Kurland, George, Bubba, Paul Spohr, Justin Mason. We're all in the same draft together. It was just, hey, might as well try this, get the juices flowing. I didn't know what the heck exactly. I was doing, guys. I was clearly unprepared. I hope I did well enough to compete. I think I did, but it was all off the top of my head. I didn't know what I was doing.
You're all on the same level, though. At the same point.
Except for Toby, aka Batflip Crazy, who had his SGP ranked spreadsheet with him, of course, because that's how Toby rolled. That's how he rolls.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about something that you were ill prepared for that draft. You were obviously not ill prepared for your Earth draft last year because you came out of it as the first ever overall champion. Now, I'm sure there's at least one person listening that has no idea what I'm talking about. So let's get into a little bit more detail about what that is. So, you know, Dave, tell me, what is Earth? What does it stand for? And what is it?
Okay, this all started with the Barf League, which is the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League, which Justin Mason is the commissioner of and has been around for years. And basically, it's the same 5x5 Roto format, but instead of average, it uses OBP. And instead of wins, it's quality starts, or at least it was. Spoiler alert, it's going to be changing for next year, but... So Barf started, and then I don't know how it came up, but Michael Govier and I were talking, and he was talking about starting like a Rust Belt league or something. He was like, hey, Dave, let's start like a very competitive league with a bunch of people in our area so we can draft live like Barf does, but take it up a notch. Let's make this, you know, a really competitive league. Let's get a bunch of good high stakes and industry players in there. And I said, yeah, I love that idea. And so from there, we announced ourselves. I wrote a Twitter post on this a while ago, and it was like a big long thread when I was like introducing GLARF, which stands for Great Lakes Area Roto Fantasy. And so that was the thing. Every league had to end with Roto Fantasy in some way. So there was also TURF that came out of this after, NERF and WERF, which were like Western Expanse, Turnpike, which is like the New York, New Jersey area. Western Expanse was like, I think, California, Oregon. Seattle. Yeah, that area. And then there was the other NERF, which was Northeastern. NERF. So Boston, that kind of area, New England. So basically, it's just a reason to get good players together to draft, to be able to, the point of it is to draft live with each other and push each other. And I want this to be really, despite only like we played for $150 and all the other leagues did not have an entry fee, which I'm going to try to change for next year because I don't think people prioritize, and I know people don't prioritize leagues that they don't have money on the line for. So I don't feel like it can be taken seriously at the level that is my goal for this, for Earth overall, where
I'll push back on that a little bit and just say that people who play in leagues for money may not prioritize their non-money leagues, but people who don't play for money at all,
right,
I would say this is a type of a league that they would prioritize just because of the notoriety that comes along with.
Yeah, and exactly. And that's what I want. I want people to, because I never got into Tout or Labor. I don't really know much about them, but I know they're well respected and stuff. But I don't know. I know that there's a lot of good analysts in those leagues. I don't know how great of players they are. And I don't mean that they're not. I'm just personally not familiar with some of their skill levels. But I wanted players who are really good in this. And I know that a lot of players told me, and I already knew this, like TGFBI, which I did for the first year, a lot of fun. I like it, but people do their fab for all their other leagues where they've got thousands of dollars on the line. And you're right. If we only have $150 on the line, people aren't going to prioritize it like their $1,500 leagues, of course. But I still feel like it, having something on the line, this is what a lot of people told me, having something on the line they're much more likely to prioritize it to some degree over other things. So I want to get to that point. So that's where what I want is the goal for this. And you asked what it stood for. I had to look this up because we just called it Earth because we plan on expanding this to other areas too. And eventually like Canada and who knows. So we just decided to call it Earth. But I think Matt Williams came up with it. Where did it go? Okay, here it is. So he came up with this after we already called it Earth, but he calls it Extraordinary Amazing Rotisserie Title Holder. So I guess that's TH.
Yes.
Like, I literally had
are the Earth.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. So I literally had to ask him though. I was like, I don't know what that stands for. we were just screwing around and just, okay, we have to call it something. Yeah. Okay. It's Earth because of all of the different area roto fantasy leagues. And then Matt came up with that after. But yeah, it's funny you said I must have been well prepared. I was not, dude. I have never done an OBP quality start league in my life. I was grasping at straws, but my hypothesis coming in was that people were going to overrate the two new categories because these are a bunch of people who are used to 5x5 standard roto. So sure. I think that everybody looked at it and just said, okay, I want to get all the high OBP guys and all of the high quality starts guys. And I'm not saying that's a bad approach, but I think that they kind of lost the trees through the forest. Like I don't think that they thought about things like Sal Perez. I ended up getting him in like the 11th round, which is far too late for anybody who's going to be playing every day with his profile. He's a really good player. I get that he's not an OBP guy, but it doesn't matter. I mean, like, your catcher doesn't need to be a 400 OBP guy for him to do well. Like, he fell way too far in the draft. So I think that was one of my advantages was coming into it with, I'm not going to overrate any categories. I'm going to control what I can control and grab the value. And it happened to work out. And I made a couple of trades that helped me along the way, but the draft went well. But I was not prepared. I tried my best, but I couldn't make like separate rankings. Like, it's just a lot of work. Cause that's my only league that's not standard 5x5 roto.
Yeah. You talked about how that might change for next year as well. And there might be some expansion. Any ideas on where I'm looking at you, Kevin, where that expansion might happen?
Yeah, actually, I have been in touch with Justin Mason, about getting something going down here in Texas and touch base with a couple of guys to see if they would be interested. And I don't know if we have time. It's sneaking up on us. We're only 3 months away from March, but I don't know if we'll have time to get it for 2022, but there is some things in the works.
That's awesome to hear. I know I've talked to at least one or two people from the Texas area who are interested. Obviously, Texas is a large state, so you could be in the same state and still be like 8 hours apart. But hopefully, exactly. We can get hopefully we can get a Texas league. That would be awesome. And I know a lot of people in Canada too. And again, Canada, big place. We can't have Alberta people playing with Prince Edward or whatever. But yeah, so I would love to expand things. And the reason that we're going to be switching it up is because we're going to be going from Fantrax to NFBC, because a lot of people complained about Fantrax's FAB system. And like, just some people don't want to be on multiple platforms. They're like, I'm just an NFBC player. I don't want to be. So we had a bunch of people who were talking about leaving. And I talked to Justin about it. And he was like, I'm fine with moving it to NFBC. But that means now there will be no trades. It'll be standard 5x5. There will be no more OBP and quality starts, which I actually liked. That was the first time I did it, but it was a lot of fun to do those. But I do think that the prevailing opinion is that we'll be moving over to NFBC for 2022.
Yeah, I am definitely one of those that is trying to cut down the amount of not the number of leagues, but the amount of platforms that I play on.
And, yeah.
I currently cross 4 different platforms. I'm going to try to cut down at least to 3. But you know, we'll see. Some of the leagues they're difficult to leave, right? Once you get into them and you've been playing in the same league for years and years, it's hard to, it's not like just throwing your hat in a ring in the best ball league. You're like, all right, I just won't do that best ball league next year. It's like, no, these are people you've been playing with, you've created relationships with, and some of them are dynasty leagues. So you don't want to just toss that to the side of the road.
For sure.
All right. That's all good stuff. So look out for new information regarding Earth and all the other ARF leagues throughout the world. If if Dave gets his way, that'll be really exciting.
For sure.
Yeah, I see an obvious location in the Texas Southwest area, the Florida Gulf area. I'm sure that there's some pretty other obvious areas that I'm missing as well. I'm excited. I was able to take a spot in the GLARF League for this coming season. So I'll be very interested to, I'm actually very excited to hear that it'll be going to NFBC/not doing OBP and quality starts. So I don't have to have a separate set of rankings.
You've got some, you've got some big shoes to fill, filling in for or coming in to replace DVR, Derek Van Riper. So it'll be, I'm excited to have you though.
Yeah, I will. I'll do my best to fill those shoes. I had Derek on the show at the end of last season. So it was a nice little transition.
Awesome.
So we are going to get into some of these players that we keep alluding to that are going deep into these early drafts. But first, we have a quick message. So we'll come back right after that.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, now let's finally talk about a few actual players. So as you are prepping for your drafts going into the 2022 season, we've all done a few drafts this year. They completed the first draft champions in Arizona. I just finished up my first DC, just started my new DC. I took Brandon Woodruff. For all those who are interested in the first round, decided to go with an ace to start it off. I am toward the end of the round. Haven't done that yet, so we'll see how the rest of my draft goes from there. And I did a couple NFBC 50s in November as well. Kevin, you have 34 drafts under his belt so far. I'm pretty sure that's an accurate number. May or may not be an exaggeration. I'm not sure. But either way.
I'm not Zach Waxman.
No.
Or John Fish.
Your own ADPs just by being in as many drafts as those guys.
They have a lot of sway with all their drafts, especially Zach. Yeah, it's crazy. Always be drafting
ADP for us to talk about. Yes, exactly. That. Always be drafting.
Yeah.
You know, we like to say that ADP should be ignored when drafting for the most part, but it isn't useless if used in the right way. You can watch the market large scale, in large scales to see movement on players as draft season moves along and see in general sense of what, you know, the groupthink is of drafting population is moving toward. So let's do some predictions on what players we think will jump up the most as draft season moves along. Another thing I want to throw out there is just a reminder, in NFBC, what's great is on each player page, you can actually see the ADP of each player, each pick that each player has been chosen at throughout time. So you can actually see what the group think is, almost like a stock almost, and you can see if it's going up or down throughout the course of draft season. And I'm saying draft season starts in October and goes to March. Draft season isn't just the last 2 weeks of March. Kevin, I'm going to ask you this question first before we get started with these players. What influence do you think the format of these leagues that are drafting right now play in these ADPs that we're seeing?
Specifically, I think there has been quite a bit of talk this season in particular about how high some of the elite closers have been pushed up already. And that has a lot to do with the format, draft and hold. We can't pick guys up. There's no fab as the season goes on. Number one for me of what goes on here is the fact there's not going to be any trades. There's not going to be any pickups down the line. So with the whole save situation in Major League Baseball drastically changing over the last few years, those that right now we think are going to be the elite guys, they're going in the second round right now.
Oh, wow. I saw early third. I didn't realize they were going in the second already.
I've seen both Hendricks and Hader in the second round. Hendricks more often.
I think when you're doing, especially a DC where you can't pick guys up. So in a DC, you have to have everything. If you're in a DC that is in the overall competition, you can't skip out on any categories, including saves. So there's a very limited number of closers right now that you can depend on. There's maybe like a handful. So it really makes sense to me that they are going that early. It's really tough to do that. And I get that. But in DCs, it's kind of more about getting the guys you need more than getting, like, you're not really looking for upside in these because you want production over upside. You want to get guys who have everyday playing time as much as possible. You want guys who have secure jobs. And because in a DC, you can't correct your mistakes, right? Like you have to have steals. You have to have saves. I know people hate drafting those things, but if you're in an overall competition, if you don't have those, you're literally done. You have zero chance of winning. So you have to suck it up and get what you need and then draft around that, the guys that you want.
Yeah, the DC that just finished up, Hendricks did win. He went the very end of round two. Hader went three picks later than that. But we didn't see another closer get off the board until I picked Edwin Diaz in the middle of the fifth round. So there's in that draft, there was definitely like those two top guys are gone. All right, fine. We'll wait. And then they all went in a round. Like obviously the entire fifth round was just Diaz, Iglesias, Presley, and then, you know, a couple other guys. Oh, Chapman.
That's what I've seen too. When the first guy after Hendricks and Hader are gone early, a couple rounds later, as soon as the first one goes, five or six guys are going that round.
I was at that point. I started that run. I'm just like, I know if I don't start this run, I'm going to be at the end of the run coming back in 20 more picks. So right. I might as well just start it. This was before Iglesias actually signed his deal with the Angels. So yeah, I went with Edwin Diaz because he's not going to lose that job regardless. He's shown it no matter how bad he is. He ends up back in the job anyway. But Iglesias, I probably would have went if I had known he had been in that pick. But I was, more importantly, I was going to start that because I knew I was going to be at the end of the run or maybe I missed out on the run altogether if I hadn't started it.
Who's your last guy? If you don't get him, then you're waiting again.
My last guy, probably top of my head, is probably Will Smith, just because he's guaranteed in that spot in Atlanta. Any competition they had with, they didn't even offer Richard Rodriguez, which we'll talk about a little bit later, arbitration. And so he's not that he's the best pitcher on the board, but he's got the job and I don't foresee him losing it.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer for you. I really haven't dug into closers yet, but that sounds about right. Yeah, and it's so important to get a guy who definitely has a job. Mark Melancon it's tough being in Arizona. I'm sure he's going probably in that range now, but I'm seeing Smith is more in like the 90 range. And yeah, after that, you've got Gallegos, but I don't know. Am I the only one who's a little skeptical that he's going to keep the job? I don't know that they've come out and given it to him. And until they do, I'm not going to trust it because as stupid as it is to most of us, managers don't go based on who the most skilled guy is to be closer. They go by who has the closer tag, like who's done it for several years. And I remember the Cardinals skipping over Gallegos for several years, even though he was the best guy in that bullpen. They kept giving it to other guys and they finally went with him, but I don't know that he's going to keep it. I feel better about Will Smith, at least until Kirby Yates is, because he's in Atlanta now, I believe, until he's ready. But I don't think that's going to be until at least midseason, and he's probably going to be rusty when he gets back. So I think it should be another year for Will Smith.
You have a brand new manager in St. Louis. We don't know what his tendencies good point. Are with his ninth inning.
You also have to consider contract situations. You know, Will Smith has a contract to be a closer. Edwin Diaz has a contract to be a closer. Like, these guys aren't going to be taken out of that role because they're being paid to be in that role. Liam Hendricks isn't going to lose that job because he's being paid to be in that role and he's also very good. But like, Gallegos still arbitration eligible. Like, these, we don't know what arbitration might look like after the CBA comes through. Right. But as of right now, our experience is saves equal money in arbitration. And so there's always, you always have to take that into consideration. That's why Melancon was always finding his way into a closer role, even though everybody just assumed he wasn't, you know, good enough to be a closer anymore. He had that contract from way back when that he's held on to. And at the time of this draft, Melancon wasn't even signed yet, and he still went in the eighth round. He was probably like that last guy. He went right after Will Smith, or a couple picks after Will Smith. So to your point, I think he's going to be the guy in Arizona. He's going to have less opportunities to save games just because it's Arizona than he did last year in San Diego, but he still got the job.
Sure. I do think Craig Kimbrell will shoot up a bit once he is traded to a team, because I don't see him not closing with the contract that he has, because the White Sox have talked about trading him. So I think he'll be traded to a team specifically to close, and then you'll see him probably go, I would guess, up until the 75 range, somewhere in there. So he's currently going at 130, something like that.
He could definitely jump up for sure. Yeah. Not to mention that just the difference in his ability to pitch when he's closing and not closing. He's just one of those guys who's shown that if he's not closing, it's almost as if he doesn't care as much. That's not true. I'm not putting that on him.
No, I know what you're saying. That extra motivation. Yeah. Who was it in the short season? There's a couple closers who said they really couldn't get up for it without the audience, without the crowd there to that they got energized by them. I think Hansel Robles was coming off of a good year of closing, and I don't think it's his velocity, but he claimed he couldn't get up for the job without a crowd there. So I could absolutely see some people just being like, if I'm not closing, it's hard for me to really get up for that game.
Get amped. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Iglesias was always vocal about being put into non-save situations when he was in Cincinnati.
That's true. Yep.
We won't have any worries about him not closing games in LA for the next 4 years. He should be safe in there as long as he keeps performing. We talk about drafting early and taking maybe extra, not having to take as extra risk because maybe the market hasn't caught up to guys. But Dave, you talked to me off air about how you really prefer those fab leagues and making those, and this whole show, at least during the season, is about fab leagues and making those additions throughout the season. But do you think that you can take more risk in a fab league if you were to draft a fab league today compared to if you were to draft a draft champions or a draft and hold, thinking, knowing that you can make up those busts on the draft or in your drafts on the wire once the season gets going?
Yeah, you absolutely should be taking less risks in a draft and hold league because you cannot replace those guys. Like I'm telling you, it's not about having the most upside guys on your team. It's about getting the most production. It's about taking the least amount of zeros as possible. You don't want any guys who have any injury concerns whatsoever. I'm even talking about your later round picks. I mean, I'm not telling you you can't take, if you really believe in one guy later, that you can't take one guy. But really, you should limit as much as possible your any kind of risks between playing time risks. If a guy is his playing time is up in the air, like you don't know if he's going to be a starter or not, don't draft him. Take the guy who's a lesser player, but who is guaranteed playing time over that guy, because that's the way to win these. You maximize your at-bats and your innings pitched. You always want to have someone to put in, because it sounds like 50 rounds. It sounds like you're like, oh man, I'm going to have all these options. Come July or August, those guys are all on the IL and you're like desperately searching for your 40th round pick of Chaz McCormick that you can throw in for a half of a week just to get some production out of a spot, because otherwise all your other options are on the IL. So you want to take as little risk as possible in draft and hold. And I take less risk than most in fab leagues, but obviously I avoid risk early in drafts. Like I'm not looking to win a draft in the first couple rounds. I take my risks usually after round 10. It depends on who it is, depends on the risk, depends on a lot of things, but I take risks, but I take them with players who aren't core anchors in my lineup. I don't want to mess around with those guys. I can get upside players later in a fab league, but in a draft and hold, I'm really taking as few risks as possible.
Yeah, Kevin, do you echo everything that Dave's saying, or do you draft a little bit differently in your draft and hold? Do you take a little bit more risk?
No, it took me a little bit to figure this out. My first couple of years of doing drafts champions, I thought, it's the 40th round. What's it matter? Let's take a shot on this guy. And I've performed much better in these leagues as I have learned that Josh Harrison is far more valuable than any prospect.
Yep.
When I could get him. And he's still getting 600 plate appearances at 34 years old, and he's sitting there qualifying at three positions. I hope I don't have to use him, but I'm going to have
to use him. In case of emergency, right? Yeah.
I can almost guarantee you will.
Use him, and probably much earlier than I hope. So
right.
Those guys, it took a little while to learn that, but I agree with Dave 100%.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning the prospects too, because that's what I forgot to mention. But that's also obviously a risk, because even when we think they're going to be up soon. Think about all the guys who drafted Bobby Witt last year. He literally didn't come up the whole year. People were thinking he could have started with the Royals. Didn't play at all at the major league level. So even guys that you think it's a given that they're going to be up, unless they're in that lineup and you know that they're going to be in that lineup, don't draft them. Like, draft and holds are not the place to go for upside like that. You know what the toughest thing to do is? It's disciplined drafting. It's doing what, it's like eating your vegetables. It's doing what you know is good for you, even if it doesn't feel great to do it. That's what you need to do, though, in order to
win.
That's
a great analogy.
Do what I, you know, tell my daughters, like, you have to have a balance. You have to eat a balanced dinner. You have to draft a balanced team. And players that don't do anything for you, they don't give you any vitamins, then, you know, you don't eat them for dinner.
We're all pro cannibalism here, obviously.
Something we haven't told anybody about yet. All right, let's talk about some of these players. Some of these players are on the risky side. Some of them educationally risky, if you will. Like, you're taking that guesstimate. But I think that a lot of the players we're going to be talking about, all they need is one little thing to change, whether it's an announcement that they're going to make the opening day roster, or an announcement that there's an injury and there's a new opening, or there's a trade, like you talked about with Kimbrel, that they're going to shoot up draft boards even tomorrow. Now, none of I tweeted this out the other day, but just like the quote, the one benefit about everything that's happening, which there are not many benefits, but if you're drafting right now, nothing can change. Like, nothing's going to change as you're drafting. So you don't have to take the full 2 or 4 hours on your clock to make a decision, hoping some brand new news is going to break, because that's not going to happen. But sooner or later, that will go away and we will get headlines again and things will change. So I got 4 categories of different players that are going post 350 currently on NFBC's ADP. Let's start off with Dave's favorite category, the prospect and the rookie category. We are going to talk a little bit about some closer talk, because everybody loves talking about closers. And we'll talk about some free agents that haven't signed before the CBA negotiation deadline, the lockout started. And then let everybody talk about some wild card players, that one hitter, one pitcher that they think something's going to change and they're going to end up shooting up draft boards. So if you're drafting early, now's the time to get them late, and expect to get them a little bit earlier on in drafts come March. All right, Dave, since this is your favorite topic, as you alluded to earlier, who's the prospect of the rookie that you see going late that you're either okay taking that chance on this late in drafts, in these early drafts, or more importantly, you expect them to jump up draft boards come March because either they're a strong spring training, they're going to show that they're going to make the opening day roster, or what have you.
So with the caveat that I haven't really started to do my full deep dive on every team and player yet. So there's far better authorities on this topic than I currently. But, and the other caveat that, Adam, you took the guy that I absolutely would have picked. So we'll get to that shortly. But I the one thing that I know in terms of prospects really well is my own system, my own being my team that I root for, which is the Cleveland Guardians. And so I happen to notice, and let me give another caveat, that roster resource in the offseason, while in season, is possibly the most important tool that you can use out there, period, like the lineup tracker and the depth charts and all that. Jason Martinez and those guys over there do a phenomenal job of keeping up with that. In the off season, though, you don't want to rely on it. It's simply not very accurate. However, I thought it was interesting that they had a guy that I'm familiar with, Stephen Kwan, slotted in for left field. Now, it's very likely that the Guardians at least sign some nominal free agent to potentially take that spot. Yeah, no, we've signed such titans as Sandy Leon and Eniel De Los Santos so far. We're really trying to keep up with the Mets after they signed Scherzer and Marte. That was our response. But I'm sure more guys are coming.
Taken.
Oh, God. It's depressing, guys. I got to tell you, it's not easy being a Guardian fan right now. Our ownership is all about looking at it as a business instead of trying to win. So from a fan's perspective, it sucks. So, but that's also a good thing when you're looking to draft potentially a prospect who could have a shot. And Stephen Kwan is really our only outfield prospect that's both talented and also somewhat ready. He had 120 plate appearances at the AAA level last year, and he's now 24 years old. He's no spring chicken. He's getting to that point where we need to see what we've gotten him. And honestly, this guy has a really good plate approach. He reminds me of Michael Brantley. Like, he doesn't have big power, but he hits for a high average. He's like looks like in 2021, he hit 325 or so between AA and AAA with 12 homers. So he's not going to light up the stats in terms of power, but you're looking for a guy with a good plate approach. I've noticed the guys who strike out less and walk more have quicker success in the majors. It doesn't mean that they're going to be a superstar, but guys who strike out a lot and don't walk usually have a pretty rough transition when going from the minors to the majors. So I like to look for guys with his kind of profile. He struck out less than he walked last year. So his walk rate was somewhere between 10 and 12% between the two levels, and his strikeout rate was between 7 and 10%. So I really like guys with that kind of profile, and I think he could have a shot because, as we stated, my team does not like to spend money.
You're not the only team. That's not the only team that does that, but they have. It does seem as though the Guardians, the Cleveland organization, has been doing that for a while, and it seems as though they've been the most noticeable, at least over the last like 2 or 3 years, for sure. Yeah, I've heard some rumblings about Kwan in general in draft rooms, and seen him go, and I don't think I've grabbed him yet. I keep hearing good things about him, and just the ability for him to get that everyday playing time quickly off the cuff. So I think it's a good call out there, somebody to keep an eye out for sure. And again, if you're getting these early drafts, get them now while you can, late. And as soon as they make, it'll be one of those situations where as soon as they make an announcement or he hits, you know, a couple dingers or something strong in early spring training, all eyes will be on that position in the outfield. So good call out there. Kevin, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about your choice here. Only, if nothing else, as I talked about right before we started recording, I was hoping you'd pick the other outfielder from the Royals, as I have plenty of Edward Olivares on in my three drafts so far. So talk to me about the outfielder you did end up choosing.
No, I went with Kyle Isbell here. He did start the season with Kansas City, surprisingly, in 2021. He was only there for 28 games, got sent down after 83 plate appearances. He was hitting 276. The thing was, they didn't like him in the spot at that time. The Royals started off the season pretty well, if you remember. After 17 games, they still had the best record in baseball. And they didn't want to use him against lefties. He only had 13 plate appearances against lefties, and he was doing just fine. Four for 12 with a walk and four strikeouts, I think. But they were only letting him primarily hit against righties. They sent him down to AAA, let him play out the entire game most days, got 451 plate appearances in just 105 games, hit 269 with 15 home runs and 22 stolen bases. Those stolen bases are the key here as late as he's going in drafts, because he is going to start the season as the Kansas City Royals starting right fielder in 2022. There is risk here, however, of how long he will maintain that spot. You mentioned Olivares. Michael A. Taylor is the center fielder. Benintendi is the left fielder. And when they start calling up some of these prospects that we're hoping to see in Kansas City this year, Nick Prado and MJ Melendez, Hunter Dozier and Whit Merrifield aren't going to have a place on the infield any longer. This isn't even mentioning Carlos Santana, who had a horrible final 4 months to the season, but now we know he was playing through an injury. He's back in the first base and DH mix as well. So there is risk here. He has to be really good to keep his spot, but he will start out with that spot and he will steal bases at least to start out the season.
I like it.
Yeah, and of course, if he does get that opportunity in Kansas City, we all know how much Kansas City actually likes to run, as long as you have the ability to run.
His defense can keep him in the lineup as well, as long as he's performing adequately. Yeah.
And I think that contract that they gave to Michael A. Taylor will prove that the Royals do prefer defensive-minded outfielders.
Oh, yes. The outfield's so big, they have to.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's a couple of outfielders to take a look at later on in draft. See if we get any announcements later on in the season. Keep them on your watch list as you get closer to your March drafts and as we get into spring training. So I'm going to hit into the infield. And as David, you alluded to, you might have stolen the player that you were going to talk about. So feel free to chime in here as well. but Bryson Stott, ended the season in AAA for the Philadelphia organization. He has, from what everything I've read, Dombrowski has literally told him he should be coming into spring training expecting to trying to win the starting shortstop job for the Phillies. So that's big. Like, I see that as the Bryson Stott is the Jonathan India of 2022, or even the Jazz Chisholm. All these guys that didn't have any experience looking to make a name for themselves in spring training, forcing the hand. Tatis did a couple years ago in San Diego as well. I'm not saying Bryson Stott is going to be Fernando Tatis, though that'd be nice because I have him in a couple rooms already. But this is a guy who he went three levels last year, from high A, double A, triple A, everywhere. Had the biggest step he had, it was in double A, where he had 312 at bats, had over 300 average, spent just a little bit, only 10 games at triple A at the end of the season, still hit over 300 there as well. Double digit walk rates, low 20s or right around 20% strikeout rate. So the guy whose hit tool has carried him throughout. He's a 14th overall pick in the 2019 amateur draft. This guy who, if he gets everyday playing time in Philadelphia, you know, alongside some of the guys that he'll be hitting with between Rhys Hoskins and Harper and what have you, this is an opportunity that he could completely run with. Now, I don't foresee him jumping up ADP so much that he becomes a starting shortstop on most fantasy rosters, but easily, especially in these draft and holds, if he's playing every day, he's more than a viable middle infielder and fill in shortstop. And who's to say he doesn't move around in different positions, second base, what have you, just to fill in. But I think just that note that Dombrowski said that he's going to come in with the mindset that it's his job to lose. He said it, he should be expecting to win that job. But I think that's a big tell as far as like where they're looking at Stott in the future of the organization. And of course, this all could change if after the lockout ends and not Corey Seager, he's already signed in Texas, but Correa or any other of the free agent shortstops that are still out there, even Anderson Simmons, which we'll talk about a little bit later, ends up signing in Philadelphia, then obviously that puts a little wrench into this. You can only read so much into what GMs and managers say, but what he said, that's a pretty strong tell.
Yeah, there's no guarantee, obviously, but I'm not overly impressed with Didi Gregorius, and I don't think they are either. There's a lot of space. There's a lot of room in that lineup for him if he forces his way up there between Alec Bohm, who didn't look like a major league hitter last year, Adam Haseley and Mickey Moniak in the outfield. Like, no guarantees there. I'm assuming they're going to be adding guys still, too. But the other thing is that they're probably going to have a DH there next year in the NL, and who knows? There's no obvious candidates on their bench for guys who need more at-bats. So if they're talking about a guy who was their first-round pick, he's got that pedigree, like where we're expecting him to be a good player. And like I mentioned before, he's got that good plate approach that translates well quickly for rookies, prospects coming up and having success right away. There's a lot of reasons to like Bryson Stott, I think, as a pick right now.
All right, so keep an eye on that. A couple other players that I was looking at in my drafts that I expect to kind of maybe not drive up in particular thing is Bobby Bradley with your Guardians. You announced that he's
should be the starter.
He's going to be the starting first baseman for the Guardians on opening day. A lot of power, a lot of swing and miss, but a lot of power there. And that's not to say that you can't find power late in drafts, but first base, not as deep as it once was. I think Bobby Bradley is somebody that people should be keeping an eye on. Nolan Gorman is another favorite prospect that a lot of people expect to, you know, make the move in St. Louis early on, especially if they have the DH in the National League. And then we talked about the Philadelphia outfield not having a lot of guarantees. Matt Vierling over there as well should have an opportunity to fight for a starting job. And he's mostly hit tool there, but somebody I'd be looking at through spring training to see what kind of impact he's making to that outfield and seeing if he can force his way into an everyday role or at least, every third day role up there. Any other guys that kind of fit this prospect rookie topic that you guys have noticed that you're at least keeping an eye on to see if any headlines pop up?
Like we talked earlier, I try to avoid them. So I that's why I went with Isbell, because he did get some playing time last year. He's still a prospect. He's still a rookie as far as major league plate appearances go. But I'm trying to avoid most of these guys.
Yep. Ditto for me.
Let's move on to some speculative closer talk, everybody's favorite topic of conversation throughout these any podcast that they listen to in fantasy baseball. All right, so I'm going to get right to it. I'm going to say this has already come out. None of us could use Corey Knable as our example here, even though he's going plenty late in drafts. Not anymore. He signed with Philadelphia. It's all but assumed he will end up being the closer unless they sign somebody else or trade for somebody else. But Dombrowski also did come out and say that he knows that Knable has closer mentality. He knows he has closer stuff. He didn't guarantee him the role, but he did expect it. And he got signed in the middle of around the 18th round of my DC. And he got drafted like two picks after the news I saw come out. That was right around the 18th round. So somewhere around 260, 270, somewhere around there. We're not talking about Corey Knable, but Dave, I'll start with you. Who is your... I saw you erased Corey Knable off your choice list.
You didn't have him on there before, so I didn't know he was off limits.
So who you got instead?
Yeah, and so for what it's worth, I think if you're going to do early draft and holds, I really taking a lot of shots at these guys who... There's a bunch of guys in this whole in this area who could all get closer jobs, and you're talking like if you can get them between... you know, rounds 20 and 35, like you could be getting huge value. And the other thing is you can still use these guys, right? Like you're going to need a lot of pitchers on your roster, not just starters, but relievers as well. So I like to target relievers who I think could get closer roles, but even if they don't, I can still put them in. So there's not a lot of risk with missing on them because it's not like a fab league where I have a limited bench. Like I have a deep bench and if they get the closer role, cool. If not, I have a reliever that's usable. Don't pick all a bunch of bad, you know, relievers who could get closer roles. But I went with Tanner Rainey. He had a rough year last year, but Washington really likes him. And I can't tell you for certain that it's definitely going to be his role, but I don't really love Kyle Finnegan. He really faltered down the stretch. I think Tanner Rainey has much better stuff, but obviously, we need to see that walk rate come down. In 2020, he looked good with a 3 walks per 9 rate, but every other year, he's really struggled with walks. He's been 7+ walks per 9 in 2019, 2021, and in a very limited showing in 2018 as well. But if he can harness that control to some degree, I think that he's the guy that they want to close. And I talked to Greg Jewett, the big closer guy in First Pitch Arizona, and he agrees with me that he thinks that they want Rainey to be the guy. Now, will he? I don't know. But we're talking about a 350-plus pick here in terms of – and I couldn't pick the two guys that you listed. So in terms of who was left and who was signed, and we'll get to the next section with the free agents because there's a couple guys there that I really like who don't have a home yet. But in terms of who's already on a team – I think Rainey's a good shot to take.
I love the Rainey pickup. I think I don't have my roster in front of me, but in my home dynasty league, I got kicked out of the playoffs in the first round. But they don't lock rosters, so it's your opportunity to pick up some flyers, if you will. And we keep pretty much everybody from our roster. So I'm pretty sure I picked up Rainey on the outset that some news comes over and keeping that or getting back that closer role, because I think everybody expected him to move into that closer role at some point anyway, except for, you know, the terribleness that was his outings, especially early in the season.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the Rainey call out for sure. He'd be somebody like if I were doing an OC right now, he'd be somebody I might target in like with the last pick. It's one of those things where take that flyer on that possible closer if you're doing a fab league right now, where you don't have no problem dropping him at the start of the season, the first fab league, when it's announced that, you know, he's not going to have the job or there's no chance, but it would be somebody who could pay off dividends if it turns out that he's going to start the season in that role. I'm going to jump ahead and I'm going to, you know, go with my guy, and only because it's one of those guys where I expect him 100% to be the closer. Every closer outlook Page, whether it be Ross Resource or whoever, has Rowan Wick as the closer for the Cubs. I think what it is just that the Cubs are bad. And it's just that stigma that people give to bad teams that they're not going to be save opportunities. I think it is going to push Melanson's draft stock down a little bit because signing in Arizona. But I think that a guy like Rowan Wick is going to be the guy in Chicago getting pretty much every opportunity to start the season. Everybody forgets that he was the closer when Kimbrel was faltering or before Kimbrel really came back. And I think that there was every opportunity to give him the opportunity to get back into that role at the end of last season as well, as he came back from his injury. End of the season, a 29% strikeout rate. You love to see that. You don't like to see the 14% walk rate to go with it, of course. There have been closers that had high walk rates. I'm looking at you, Alex Reyes, in St. Louis last year, that can still be very successful in that role. So I expect that this is just one of those guys that may not jump up because of any news. I think it's just going to be one of those guys that kind of inches his way up ADP throughout between now and February as people start realizing, hey, I need a guy who is in the role, regardless of whether or not he's on a good or bad team. And they're going to start realizing that Wick has that job in Chicago moving forward. Do you guys see anybody else in Chicago that's going to push him aside, or is this kind of, are you guys on the same page?
No, I think Wick's the guy. The only thing that crosses my mind is I'm shocked that Marcus Stroman was signed by the Cubs. We didn't think they were going to spend any money. So are they going to be one of the teams that is maybe in the trade market for a closer? But as far as right now, yeah, I think Wick's the guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think Cody, I don't know how you say Cure, Hauer, would be the only other guy that I think might have a shot to close there offhand. There's Scott Efros there. I don't really know much about him, so I don't think he's really got the closer stuff, though. Usually you want a guy who strikes out more guys, but there's a possibility, like Kevin was alluding to, with that they sign someone due to the fact that they are... that Stroman signing kind of signals that they're going for it, but I don't know. We'll have to see what else they do. But I think it's a really good shot to take at this point. And like I said, if it doesn't work out, at least you got a good reliever with Rowan Wick there.
Yeah, I will say that he is now he's 29 years old and he is finally arbitration eligible. So there is something to be said about whether or not they continue to give him save opportunities next year throughout the course of the season, hoping that he doesn't bring up the cost if arbitration is still in the same situation as it has been for the last few years. Kevin, who are you looking at in the closer market that's going post 350?
Yeah, kind of like you. You didn't make me erase my first pick, but like Dave did. But I had thought Pierce Johnson, and then when I started looking around a little bit, it looks like even though he was ADP at the moment of 525, as soon as Melanson signed with Arizona, everybody's assuming he is the guy. So I feel like this is cheating a little bit. So I did pick another, and it fits exactly what Dave was saying. These are the guys you can take a shot on. And these are the guys that, as far as if I'm a fan of the team they play for, I hope they do not get the closer job. But a guy like Chad Green for the Yankees may not even be the second guy up. It may be Loaiza. I think Green would get the first shot because he's a bigger strikeout guy. But even if he doesn't, to Dave's point, I have a guy that threw over 83 innings and struck out 99 batters last year. I can use him in my lineup any given week ahead of that sixth or seventh starter that's not going to give me that kind of production and not do it with a 3.12 ERA. These are the kinds of guys that I will take a shot on late. And either one of them, they're being drafted in about the same spot. They're going just inside the top 400. So you could grab him or Loaiza for the same reason. You could use them whether they're getting saves or not. And even if they're not the closer, they're going to vulture one here and there. Chad Green had six. Loaiza had five last year. These are the kinds of guys that are very valuable in this draft and hold format.
Yeah, Chapman had plenty of times throughout the course of the season. Not only did he pick up, but they basically said, we're not going to use him 3 days in a row or even 2 days in a row in some situations. So those vulture opportunities, if that were to happen again in New York, would definitely happen. Yeah, going back, I did make a note about Pierce Johnson only because The Melanson signing in Arizona came pretty much at the same time as the Knievel signing in Philadelphia. And so Pierce Johnson went about 4 or 5 picks after Knievel did in my DC as soon as that happened. And so I expect that to continue to happen.
When your draft ended, his minimum pick on the NFBC ADP went to 267.
Yep.
So about half, about half of what his average was.
Yeah.
Those are the picks that I hate because I think everybody's just assuming he's like the most solid pitcher in their bullpen. So he's going to get the role, but there's so many options there between they just signed Robert Suarez, who had 42 saves in Japan, even though I don't think he has the stuff to close. They've got Austin Adams, who absolutely has the stuff to close, but he needs to work on his walks from last year. And they've got Emilio Pagan, who I believe all of the beat writers were saying had the job coming into last year. Pierce Johnson is exactly the type of guy who at 250 I'm avoiding like the plague, because there has been no indication that I've seen that he's the guy, other than just people making the assumption or seeing it on roster resource, which again, at this point in the offseason, super unreliable when it comes to stuff like that.
I was pretty happy to get Pagan in that draft about, I think, 18 rounds later.
Exactly. It's a much better shot to take.
All right. I think that's enough closer talk for now. Though we did have one honorable mention listed here. That's Anthony Bender. I put that on there just to keep an eye on him.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Everybody expected him to move into the role or keep the role in Miami. Even after Anthony Bass floundered at the beginning of the season, obviously, Yimi Garcia took that role. And then after he was traded, it was between Bender and Floro. Floro kind of ran with it, I guess one could say.
Jogged with it, maybe. Briskly walked with it.
But I think Bender's the better pitcher. I don't think there's much argument there. Right. It definitely has more powerful stuff. Definitely somebody to keep an eye on.
That's a good pick.
You guys notice anybody else that's worth taking or looking at, keeping on your watch list as drafts move along?
So yeah, while we're on this topic, for the next section of free agents who don't have a home yet, two guys that come to mind for me are Ian Kennedy and Alex Colome, who both have multiple years of closer experience and who have successfully closed. Colome for a long time, and people have been trying to bury him for years, but that guy keeps getting jobs, so I would not put it past him to get another job. And Ian Kennedy, who I ended up taking in the first pitch Arizona draft, in the few years that he has closed, he's actually been pretty solid. So I expect him to get another job or at least an opportunity at some point. My hope is that he doesn't sign when it's like a setup man for a definitive closer somewhere. But if he goes to a place like Chicago Cubs or something, I fully expect Kennedy to close over Wicks. I think that Kennedy could be that guy that you could take late before he signs, because once he signs, he's probably going to be jumping up 200 spots or so.
Yeah, that's the situation for all these guys. And the guy I'm going to talk about in a second as well is you're hoping that they sign in a place so that they don't have a definitive closer and you move into that role, or they're pushing back a younger guy or an arbitration eligible guy like Rowan Wick and moving into that role. These are the type of guys too that are like teams sign them for one year and they put them in the closer role to put them on a pedestal for all the other teams to watch them, and hopefully they do really well and they trade them away at the deadline. For pennies on the dollar, really, for anything. They're basically purchasing prospects for these 1 year deals. And it goes right into Richard Rodriguez is the guy I put on my list as well. I said that we had enough talking about closers, but we're going to just continue to push closers into the next section. It seems like obviously the closer in Pittsburgh for a few years, got moved over to Atlanta, not going to be put into a closer situation there with bullpen that they had to mention that Will Smith obviously had that role pretty locked down, did not get arbitration offered to him. And so he is a free agent as well. He can go anywhere he wants and then get traded. I think it's in his best interest as well to go to one of those teams like Kyle Schwarber did that 1 year deal in Washington. It's like, go to a place where or Jock Peterson did in Chicago when they said he was going to play every day. Go to a place that is going to give you the opportunity to shine and then make a name for yourself. So when you hit free agency for real, because I do believe he's still arbitration eligible this year, he doesn't become a true free agent until 2024. Richard Rodriguez, that is. So it would be in his best interest, like, even though he has the ability to sign anywhere, if he were to find a place where he could shine at the end of games, he could definitely make a name for himself when he does hit free agency as well. So I like that we are all eyeing those future closers, even the guys that are still on the market. But Kevin, who do you got for free agent? Tell me you're not talking about another closer.
Yeah, I was done with closers. I went with a hitter here. Andrelton Simmons is the kind of guy I really like in this spot, because his defense is going to keep him in the lineup every day, regardless of what team he signs for. He still doesn't strike out a lot. He did have the lowest batting average of his career by far. Looks like a huge outlier. He was banged up a lot of the year. Still got 451 plate appearances. So Steamer expects him to bounce back up into the 260 range. Even that would be very low compared to what he's done throughout his career, at least the last few years. So this is the kind of guy going to be in the lineup every day. Not going to hit a lot of home runs, but he'll run into one once in a while. Not going to steal a lot of bases, but he'll grab one if it's there once in a while. But he's going to contribute to my runs category, my RBI category, not hurt my batting average category. And most importantly, it's not going to be a zero.
Man, you told me, I saw that you put Simmons on this rundown. I was, you know, the last five rounds of my DC. And so I'm like, did a quick search. He was still on the board. He was still available. I ended up grabbing him in the 47th round. And for all the, it's not that I needed I had actually probably plenty of shortstops. I probably didn't need to pick him. But for all the points you just said, no matter where he goes, he will play. And to all the points, Dave, you made at the beginning of the show, like the playing time matters, regardless of whether or not he's going to be in the middle of a lineup or whatever. Just knowing that you have that piece on your bench that you can throw in, just break in case of emergency type of player. So I'm happy to have him. I was slightly surprised. And it also makes me wonder whether or not he will make that jump, though, in ADP. He is who he is, right? Andrelton Simmons is who he's going to be. He could tick up his batting average, like you talked about, especially if he's in the right park, if he's, you know, in the right lineup. He's going to play every day, but he's probably going to produce what he has been producing. So I wonder how much he will jump up and whether or not he will be on how many fab leagues he will be drafted in, either now or closer to draft season, based on the fact that it's just, he's Andrelton Simmons. It's what he's going to do.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that's always there throughout the season. If your shortstop gets hurt, you start looking and you like, okay, I want to find somebody better, but Simmons is going to be there if I need him. And like my honorable mention for this category was going much later last season, but had too good of a year. So he barely qualifies for our post 350. I mentioned him earlier, Josh Harrison. He's the same way. He's going to play wherever he lands. He might be near the top of the lineup like he was much of 2021, depending on where he lands. In that case, he won't qualify as a post 350 guy anymore. He will shoot into fab league drafts if that happens. So, and the triple position eligibility for him is a huge bonus as well.
All right, we are going to, let's fly through our next two topics, as we, I know Dave has to go record his other podcast of the evening. And so let's get through our wild card section. Dave, I'll start with you. Give me both, you know, let's just go both your hitter and your pitcher. Sure. Pretty much anybody going past 350 you think is going to jump up.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into depth, but Nick Gordon and Chaz McCormick are both hitters that excite me going this late, because McCormick right now is in line to start for the Astros. And these are both like combo guys, hit the ball hard enough to maintain some power and both also run. I think Nick Gordon's playing time's up in the air. Like, he's definitely a guy I'm targeting more in fab leagues than DCs. But even in a DC, there's going to be points in the year. If you're drafting him that late, he's going to have weeks where he plays, even if he doesn't overtake anybody to play every day. So those are two really talented guys who are going to contribute in pretty much all categories. Their StatCast numbers back up that they're legit hitters at this level. And then Jake Odorizzi and Nestor Cortez for pitchers. And I really like both of these guys because they play on winning teams, and they're guys that you can get, like if you can get those pieces of winning teams really late, where you have a much better shot at getting some wins out of your streamers. But those guys showed some legit skills. I mean, Cortez, at least. Odorizzi kind of is what he is. Like, you're probably going to get like a low four ERA, but pretty solid whip, like 1.25 whip, something in that range. And when you're talking about getting that late, if you can get like a guy who can just give you solid stats on a good team, get you wins, that you can stream against some of the weaker opponents, that's really all you're looking for at that point. So those are the types of guys that I'm targeting at this point in the draft.
Nice. All right, Kevin, who are your wild cards going post 350?
Yeah, one of my favorite guys, and I mentioned him on Dugout Study Hall as well. We talked pretty in-depth about Yoshi Tsugo.
I like it.
For the Pirates. Appears that he's going to be in that two-hole top third of the order, even on a bad team. He only had 144 plate appearances with the Pirates, but they said, hey, you're going to play every day. We're going to let you get in the flow. You're going to be the guy we thought you were going to be when you came over to the U.S. a couple years ago, and all he did was hit 268 with eight home runs in those 144 plate appearances. Only struck out 22.9% of the time. That's a small sample, 144 plate appearances, but that is huge, and still walked over 10% of the time. So I think he's there. He's on a bad team. He's going to play every day. My pitcher may not be in the rotation to start the season, but he did have a couple of bright spots mixed in with some rough outings last year. I like what the Rangers have done with some pitching over the last few years. So I like Glenn Otto down in Texas. I think he's someone that I am confident enough that he will get playing time throughout the season, even if he's not in the rotation to start.
Yes, guys, I like the Tsugo pick as well. Also nice to have the dual eligibility in most formats, yep. First base, outfield as well, especially that late in drafts. More flexibility you have with these bench pieces, the better. And I agree. I think more people are going to start to notice, and he will make it to FAB League drafts toward the end of those as well. I'm going to switch it up. I think I put Matt Vierling on my list, but I actually, since I already mentioned him earlier, Yandy Diaz is somebody that I'm looking at later on in drafts. Again, first base, third base, that dual eligibility is huge. All the talk about how strong the guy is, but the launch angle is awful. I will say 32% fly ball rate is back up to where it used to be, as opposed to the 11% that he had in 2020. He's brought down his ground ball rate. So he's making some adjustments. With the adjustments that Tampa Bay has made to their roster, I can see it is getting more regular playing time, especially even at third base, mixing it in first base, keep that eligibility as well. He's going to hit for definitely some power as long as he can get the ball in the air. And if he's playing at any kind of a regularity in Tampa Bay, like his counting stats are going to be more than viable, especially as your corner on most teams, hitting above. Steamers got him for 275, 312, 372. 275, 372, 422 slash line for next year over the course of 130 games. 30 games that late in drafts is still as close to regular playing time as you're going to get in most situations. So Yandy is somebody I think is going to inch up, especially with third base just not being a very solid option early on in drafts. He'd be somebody that I think a lot of people are going to, if the teams that wait on third base may also grab Yandy Diaz as their corner later on, especially with that flexibility in positions. So somebody I think everybody should be keeping an eye on for. And then Zach Thompson in Pittsburgh, being traded from Miami. One of the pitchers being traded away from Miami. I don't expect him to be the last one, to be honest, as they make room for all the talent that they have in Miami. Should be the number three, at least, to start the season.
Like their ace.
Yeah. He might be the third. He might go on the third day, but yeah, he'll probably put up their ace numbers for sure. So the opportunity is there. He's going to be in that rotation. I don't foresee him, you know, being kicked out of that rotation. So we talk about at bats, maximizing at bats is huge, but also innings pitch, something that you really got to keep consideration on as you're going through the season. You know, Steamer has him for 150 innings as he only hit 75 innings at the major league level last year. And so that's more than viable, even with his peripherals. And I think he could be a valuable option at the back end of your rotation in most fantasy leagues. Yeah, a couple of the guys that we put up there just to keep an eye out between the three of us. Yan Gomes, depending on what happens with Wilson Contreras in Chicago, could end up being the starting catcher there as well. Evan Longoria in back at third base, probably every day in San Francisco. Cesar Hernandez has somehow found a way to a starting second base job, probably close to the top of an order in Washington as he signed. Rosny Contreras, another option for the Pirates, did have a very small cup of coffee of last year. Probably won't start the season at the major league level, but I would expect him to move up quickly. Maybe I'll have a chance to see him in Indianapolis, as that's where I'm based and that's their AAA team. And then Reed Detmers obviously had his moment with the Angels. We all kind of know where the Angels are with the health of their pitchers. So I think that the opportunity for Reed Detmers to move back into that role will be there. Dave, do you disagree with that comment?
No, I think that the Angels have a ridiculous amount of risk in their rotation, where Detmers should get significant run, which is why I really like him, because that guy has a ton of swing and miss in his profile as a pitcher, which is a good thing. So he's one of those exceptions where, because like Kevin was saying before, a guy who's been at that level already, he didn't have a great run last year, but they've proven that they're willing to bring him up. And I think that he's going to get a lot of run this year in LA.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I think we talked enough about some really good players, some good options to keep on your watch list as draft season moves along. Kevin, do you have any other last minute words of wisdom for people who are deciding to draft early? We started this last week, our last episode. Anything worth keeping an eye on as they're moving through their drafts?
Just to do it, jump in a draft. Dave was talking earlier about what people consider high stakes. You can get NFBC league drafts going right now for $50. And draft about many of the people we talk about, many of the guests we've had on the shows are in those NFBC 50s. NFBC also did put out a guarantee, right, based on the possibility of next season being delayed. As long as we play 100 games, everything goes off as drafted. Less than 100 games, everybody gets a refund. They decide what we're going to do, and we draft all over if there is going to be games to draft for. So there's no risk as far as that is concerned. All these signings we saw the last couple of weeks to get in before the lockout, we wouldn't have seen this many guys sign the rest of this month, I don't think. So we have more information right now than right. we would That's have true. Had the rest of the month to true. Start doing these drafts.
That's so a great point.
If you've ever thought about jumping in, it's a great year to do it.
Great point.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. This is unprecedented as far as the amount of signings that we've seen this early on in the offseason. All right, that's going to do it. Dave, thanks so much for taking the time to break this all down with us. Could you remind our listeners where they can follow, listen, read your work moving forward, as well as anything specific you might be working on that they should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, guys, had a blast. Thank you so much for having me. Kevin, it was great to see you again. Adam, after talking to you for a long time, finally great to see you in person over via whatever this is, Zencaster. Yeah.
This is as in person, yeah.
Exactly. It's as in person as it gets in the COVID years. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at RunDMcD. Add that D so you're not tweeting RunDMC the band. And you can also follow my work at FanGraphs. I will be writing a lot more this offseason. Unfortunately, I didn't get to do as much writing during this earlier, like at the end of the year, as I wanted to. And then you can also, as Adam mentioned earlier, follow me on my podcast, High Stakes Heat, with my friend and co-host, Jake Halsker, and Friends with Fantasy Benefits, which is where I'm off to right now with Justin Mason. And tonight we're on with Michael Govier as well. And then I also write the strategy section for Michael Simeone's SP Streamer draft kit. It's only $5 and it is jam-packed with a ton of information. I wrote 50 pages on strategy. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, which if you take this game seriously, in my opinion, strategy is something that can really separate the good players from the great players. So I highly recommend you guys check that out too.
That is amazing. And yeah, absolutely. Highly recommend checking out the SB Streamer draft guide. And for, if nothing else, the 50 pages that Dave put his heart and soul into. So go for that.
I did.
We'll be continuing to put out On the Wire episodes every 2 weeks throughout the offseason. So keep a lookout for those incoming. There's an amazing podcast coming out every day on the Pitcher List Pod's main feed. So please make sure to subscribe to the podcast network and the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball feed wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. And also make sure to follow at Pitcher List Pods to get updates about every new episode of all the Pitcher List Podcast Network shows. Give them all a listen. Thanks once again to Dave McDonald for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hasting, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.